For August the 28th, 2015, we talk about I Am Bread, YouTube gaming, and we ask you about your favorite unjustly maligned games. Welcome to the 118th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Jala, thank you so much for filling in for David, who had to disappear under mysterious circumstances. We hope he's okay.
I hope so, too. I haven't heard from him in a while.
He is completing the Black Ops mission that Ben started in Russia. I believe it was last week.
Yeah. No, we're tag teaming it. Yeah. Oh gosh, does anybody have an anecdote
whose life is interesting?
Just taking a quick poll.
I have literally all of my bosses up through like three levels traveling right now, so the office is nice and quiet.
Yeah, that's good.
That passes for stress.
Yeah,
well, quiet.
You know what? I know what I can do with this intro here. Gary has a Kickstarter.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah. So Gary,
tell us about the Kickstarter, Cole.
So I'm not involved with it aside from this being, associated with the network. So Gary from Abject Suffering, Watch Out for Fireballs and Bonfireside Chat has launched a Kickstarter for a book, actually, that is kind of in the style of the Worlds of Power books from the late 80s, early 90s, books based on Nintendo games that are kind of written in this crazy style. And it is kind of set in this, or assumes this alternate reality where a Dark Souls-like game came out on the NES. And so the book is called Souls of Darkness. And and yeah, it is very much in that in that style. The pitch video is hilarious, and yep. all of the rewards are pretty good, and he's most of the way there. So if you haven't checked this out, there's an easy link that we have. It's duckfeed.tv/soulsofdarkness, and go look there and see what's happening in the fallen lost kingdom of Koldran. Which is what the kingdom is named.
I think there's that branches us into another medium, and I think there's only like two or three mediums of entertainment that we're not actually in.
Yeah, we got video coming soon. We've got I'm wondering. And we got audio on lock.
We even have a game, because Gary did that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to say we need an official like Duckfeed video game, but we've got one made by one of our hosts.
Yeah.
There's not a lot left. Smoke signals we probably need to get into at some point.
Yeah. Do it like Semaphore. We need to get out there and start a Semaphore chain around the world.
I mean, it's lain dormant for a long time, but I think that medium is really catching fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, that is duckfeed.tv/soulsofdarkness. I want to give him as many ups as possible, because I want that to exist.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. Is there anything else before we just kind of get into the body of the episode?
Let's do this.
Let's do it. So we've got the usual three for you: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Looking at the stories here, I'm going to Dennis, why don't you go first?
Yeah, so on August 26th, which will have happened by the time people are listening to this, YouTube posted in Slack, man. I posted in the Slack first, so I got official rights. YouTube is launching their own gaming site called, unimaginatively, I guess, YouTube Gaming. And basically, it's meant to be a Twitch competitor. Where you know you can stream live games, but it will also host Let's Plays, and kind of be. I think from what I can tell, their shtick or how they're going to be different is just a better interface and better aggregation of gaming related stuff. So Twitch, you know, it's not bad. It's just not the best interface. for searching for games or searching for channels, people, even profiles. It's kind of clunky, especially on the mobile app. So while functionally, on the streaming side anyway, I don't see YouTube being much different. If they have like a really easy to use interface, I could see it making inroads. And then of course you have the huge, huge database of Let's Plays that, that YouTube already has, that'll kind of be on the same platform. So we'll see how it does. Whether people are just comfortable with Twitch and don't really see a need to switch, or if it's something that they'll go for. The thing I like the best was Twitch's response when they started talking about YouTube gaming, which was, "Welcome, player two. Hit us up on Google Plus."
Wow.
Another line extension from Google that went so well.
That's did you say line extension?
Line extension, yes. Huh,
I wasn't aware of that term. Oh. Yeah, Google has kind of a history of abandoning stuff, and I don't know if they're going to be any better at that with Alphabet. And also, boy oh boy, like maybe Twitch has some of its kind of bad stuff to it, but man, that doesn't have anything on the terrible YouTube community.
That's true. Yeah, the community, at least those who would comment on YouTube, is not best.
Well, at the same time though, a lot of Twitchers already upload all their stuff to YouTube anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, they might get some business from that just because, you know, hey, they're already using YouTube for one half of it anyway. So,
and
you know,
counterpoint, Cole, have you ever been on a Twitch stream and seen the chat room for anything that's even moderately well viewed?
No, I've only seen my own stuff and that's been fine.
Yeah, so anything that gets above 1,000 listeners, and I would guess, or 1,000 viewers, I would guess the threshold is even lower than that, just becomes this unreadable wall of constantly cycling all caps and emoticons text.
I don't know if this reveals me as like some kind of elitist, but I would love to have the visible chat, like to be able to mark certain people as VIPs. To make it so that they're going to rise above it. So
to like, show up to you or to show up to everyone else?
To show up to everybody else. Like if you want to see the good chat, get in here and look at this.
I know there are plugins. One of them is called Moobot. And I think there is a functionality like that where you can kind of like automatic. I know you can like automatically warn and censor people. So a lot of people use it to like censor profanity in their feeds.
Yeah.
So I imagine if you were just prolific enough with that, you could find something kind of effective. The only problem is, you know, unless you're going to set up a unique thing for every single person that logs in, it might be kind of hard to do.
Yeah. So like another part of this, like what's going to make a difference here? Like unless, you know, like, okay, so immediately somebody's going to find a way to stream to both simultaneously.
Yeah.
But I'm also wondering like, you know, in terms of the creators, you know, the people who are going to come there, I think they're probably going to gravitate towards whichever one has the best monetization.
Yeah.
You know,
or just the fairest policies. Like, I don't know what Twitch does for monetization right now.
You can get like a pro account and their ads and you get it's like an affiliate cut off of the views and things like that. Whereas YouTube, you know, at least so far, you get a certain rate per 1,000 views or whatever it is, depending on how many ads, you know, you choose to put out. I know of more YouTube millionaires, at least the one, PewDiePie or whatever, than I do of Twitch millionaires. Most of the money that I know that happens on Twitch is actually from people donating directly to streamers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like, we do that for Duckstream, too. Like, we have that whole infrastructure set up to take the, you know, to take that. And so that's kind of cool. I don't know. Like, I'm going to be interested to play around with it. Like, if it's a place where you can take video game related content, not just the live streaming kind of stuff, and put it over into this easy to find place. I don't like YouTube's interface anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And
it,
so
it is pretty rough.
I don't have a lot of faith, and neither of them are really winning in that. In that arena, but I think that like discoverability is, you know, they've got a lot to prove to me actually.
Well, just having a rival of some sort, even if they're not that great of a competitor, may cause Twitch to make some, you know, changes / improvements, you know, may trigger some alterations that will better it as a service.
True.
Yeah. And if it's healthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question, though. I wonder if just like functionally, if YouTube will have any sort of, and I don't know how much you can do this, but any sort of like better performing streams, because I'm constantly fighting low upload.
Yeah, so. I think that like a lot of that is on the streamer and their ISP too. It's not on the server side. And in terms of like infrastructure, Twitch is Amazon now, and Amazon is the internet.
Yeah. Yep. Basically.
Yeah. Jala, how about your story?
So my story is about a game that is being developed by a guy who formerly worked with Rockstar and Ubisoft, called Luis Antonio. And the game is called 12 Minutes. And what it is basically a real-time 12-minute game that you basically, your whole point and purpose is to avoid dying. You play a guy whose name is Aaron, who's settling into his apartment for the night with his wife. And it's currently a playable build on 12minutesgame.com, but it has only placeholder art right now, so don't let that turn you off. It's just he's working on the design elements right at the moment. Basically, the intention of this game is to allow the player to knock through the dominoes of consequential decision-making. That's a quote. As you replay the game, the character retains knowledge he built from the prior session, sort of like a Groundhog Day thing. As you repeat the same things over and over again, the character Aaron gets better at doing them. And per the dev, actions that he would initially refuse to do, once he realizes there are no consequences, he will be open to try. The game also doesn't give you any specific goals, so like you just have to figure it out on your own. It's kind of like plopping you down and you have to figure out what to do on every 12-minute session.
Is there something at the end of the 12 minutes that will kill you no matter what?
Well, until you figure out how to not die.
Okay.
Yep. I guess. So it's supposedly, it's compact, but it's supposedly not going to be short. The most recent full playthrough of the game took 10 hours, according to Antonio. And it's only being made on his nights and weekends around his other dev work, but he hopes to finish it within about a year and then release it on Steam, followed by consoles and tablets. It's, you know, his own indie dev project. He says everything in this game, and I mean everything, has a reason to be there, from the layout to the timing, object placement, etc. Sometimes I change a detail that I feel isn't that important. Example being the position of a couch, only to realize that it creates a huge chain of repercussions that I didn't notice. So like lots of different stuff throughout the whole game is point, you know, in the spots that they're in for reasons, and everything has its purpose. And as you go through, you build character knowledge, your character builds knowledge while you also build knowledge alongside it. So I have not played, because I know that's the next question, I have not played the playable build that's up on the website yet, but that's going to be something that I'm doing before this episode releases. So
I thought you were going to say before this episode is over.
Yeah.
I guess I could, actually. I just put you guys on mute and just be like,
I'll give you a 12-minute warning. Yeah. So this is an interesting concept. Like, I've seen this in a couple of like IF games, actually, like something that is meant to be kind of like repeated and your knowledge carries over from playthrough to playthrough. That is also the twist in certain games we've spoken about recently. you know, so that's pretty powerful. I'm wondering kind of like how far this is from being a final thing.
Well, he brought it apparently to PAX East with him, and so there was some kind of booth at PAX East that had this playable for people who were at that convention. So, you know, apparently he's pretty well along on it, and he'll do all the finishing touches and stuff within the next year and then release it out on Steam. So,
So is he doing the art himself, or is he getting other people to do that?
The article doesn't say, but the article does mention that this particular guy is both a dev, like a, you know, game dev himself, but also an artist So I would assume as an artist and as this being his baby project, it didn't mention anybody else working on it with him. So I assume he would do the art himself. But a lot of artwork goes into making a game. So I don't know if that, you know, if he's going to be doing all the 3D modeling, all of the concept art. I have no idea offhand.
Yeah.
And so, this could be something like Beyond Eyes or that Dragon Cancer, where once people start taking note, he gets the ability to have a more talented team attached to the project.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely more resources at the very least.
I'd be curious with the idea of, hey, like, you know, you get into this Groundhog Day and you can try anything. I'm curious to see how well that plays out when you're kind of dealing with the limited verbs that any video game gives you. So, you know, no matter how intricate it is, there's only so many buttons you can press. There's only so many animations you can program into a game. Well, and so I wonder if that will feel limiting.
I don't know offhand, but I do know that the article goes into talking about, for example, when you come home to your wife, if you sit down and eat dinner with her, that prevents her from doing X thing that, you know, totally changes how stuff plays out from there. So even just, do you eat dinner or do you skip dinner? That kind of thing, even just simple stuff like that changes everything in the sequence that follows. Mm. So even if you have a limited number of verbs, that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, that limits how many different ways it'll play out, I guess. Yeah. So
it's probably that they have in a Her Story or like Stanley Parable like way mapped out what each branch is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is still cool. Like
a lot of work. Yeah.
I know, right?
12, like 12 just minutes is a long time.
Yeah, it's a really long time.
Well,
especially
originally,
if you hold a player's attention.
Yeah.
Well, originally he was intending on doing like a whole neighborhood block, and then you know what, nope, scale down
yeah,
one apartment, two people.
This game needs to come out eventually.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then too, like it says in the article too, so this isn't any kind of a spoiler, this is just a flat out thing that happens, that basically what happens is while you're having dinner with your wife or whatever it is that you're doing at that time, a cop comes to the door and then accuses your wife of murder, and that's the main driving force for what happens, you know, through the rest of the 12 minutes that causes you to die. It's not like you suddenly have a heart attack in the middle of dinner. No, this is the story beat that causes that.
Hmm.
So.
Huh.
So just, I definitely want to play through that.
It sounds like something to keep
an
eye on.
Your options to let him, yeah, let him take in your wife and then just quietly eat dinner for the rest of the 12 minutes?
I wouldn't know. I haven't played it yet, but I will.
That's the secret ending. It's the do nothing ending. It's like the secret ending of Far Cry 4. So Ben, what's your story?
So my original story was going to be about the YouTube Twitch competition.
Mm-hmm.
So my backup story is that they released a trailer for Metal Gear Solid 5 for next week's release. I have not even seen the trailer yet. That's so. It's my secondary story. So I'll just include it.
Let's conjecture about a trailer, guys.
Well, I'm avoiding it. People have there are already reviews out, and there are reviews saying something like my first 40 hours with Metal Gear Solid 5 or something like that, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And I've also had people tell me that like there are just all kinds of spoilers out there, and I'm one of these, you know, just madmen who really cares about the Metal Gear Solid story. And so I don't want like cool stuff to be ruined.
Yeah, that's where Twitter can be a really dangerous place.
Whew, man, I've stayed away. Go ahead, John.
There are some people in Slack who said that they are retreating away from Twitter and going to Slack so there won't be any spoilers for MGS.
Because like, everybody, just be cool. Like, just post Howwobble GIFs. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Although Jala, it's funny. I have noted. I would love to see a chart of my tweets versus my Slacks. Sure. I think there is an inverse relationship between the two.
Yeah.
That's scratched an itch that I think I was kind of using Twitter for, but is not exactly Twitter's wheelhouse. So.
Well, I was mostly posting links and stuff on the level, but because I was doing so under my own name rather than as the level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like only the people who were friending me really saw those. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
on Facebook. So
So I pre-ordered my copy of Metal Gear Solid 5. That's something I said I wouldn't do after Batman Arkham City. There we go. What? No,
Arkham
not City.
Arkham Abomination?
I don't know about Arkham
Abomination. Arkham Origins?
Arkham Knight.
What?
It wasn't, but Metal Gear Solid 5, I can't see myself not getting that. Same thing with Mario Maker. I was like, okay, I'll just put both these on the same transaction. I'll get them day one. It's going to be cool. I'll be fine.
At that point, it's like you're paying to complete the set, and whether or not it's good, there's value inherent in completing the set.
That's probably the way I treated Arkham Knight too, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just the ways we justify these things to ourselves. Yeah. Let's see. I've got a story. This is along the lines of just stuff being released on weird platforms. There is a Final Fantasy VII, a version of Final Fantasy VII out on iOS now. And
yep.
This is crazy because this is something that, two years ago. There we go. Oh, my God. Time is meaningless. That 2 years ago when we talked about Final Fantasy VII on Watch Out for Fireballs, we're like, oh, it'd be great. Like, give us Final Fantasy VII on iOS and let us max out the stats, so we don't have to fight the battles. Cool. And that is something that they've done. So this is a way for people to play that at the exorbitant square prices for iOS games. Good.
So walk me through why you would max out your stats. Is it just so then you can play through and get the story and like stay on the critical path?
Yes. Just because like the random battles are a pain in the ass if you have to kind of like slog through them all the time. Whereas if you can just kind of clear the battles immediately, then it becomes a non-issue. It would be easier to just turn off the random battles, but that would also not trivialize the boss fights, which sometimes you need to do for the purpose of the story.
Gotcha. And that was going to be my question, is doesn't maxing out your stats also trivialize the boss fights?
Yes.
Oh, good. So it's really just for the story.
Yep. But that's just an option. Like you can approach this just like anything else. So this is kind of funny because, again, along the lines of Ben's story, I haven't played this and I haven't really looked at anything about it aside from like the launch trailer and read a couple of details. But this is a game that has pre-rendered backgrounds, right? It's only going to look so good because they were put out at PlayStation 1 resolutions, right? This isn't going to be upscaled. The PC ports of Final Fantasy 7 and Final Fantasy 8 don't look that great because they're kind of like these weird interpolated versions of these low res kind of still images with the kind of garage shaded characters put over top of them. And they're going around and doing their thing. I think the battle sequences look okay, at least in the PC version. But I can't imagine what that chunkity ass background would look like on a Retina screen.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
And I still have one small comment to make along the Final Fantasy VII lines.
Go ahead.
Team Four Star, the people who did the parody Dragon Ball Z Abridged and also Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged, etc., are doing Final Fantasy VII Abridged.
Oh, yeah?
They just released a trailer for that. And so people who like the idea of learning about the story and want to see something funny, or people who already have played it and want to see something, entertaining, well, there you go. Like, Team Four Star is cool. I like them anyway. And so it will be entertaining to watch that. I am definitely going to be watching.
They voice it, right? Like
they summarize it. They really do, but they summarize it in a very funny, parody type way.
Yeah.
And, make fun of stuff that, is ridiculous and so on. So
it is to video game plots what like Stephen Colbert is to the news.
Yeah.
Or what Auto-Tune the News is to the news.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we talk about your responses to a question that we ask you. Boy, I messed that up, but there's no stopping this train there. Once it leaves the station. Dennis, you were kind enough to put this question out to the masses, and let's see here. Why don't you let the nice people know what the topic of discussion is for today?
Yeah, so I put it out to the masses, but it is actually the brainchild of Graham Markison. Who posted it on the Slack. So He asked, what poorly received game are you an apologist for? So where do you think the critics or general opinion got it wrong?
And I will begin with Graham's response to his own question, saying, I've become such a defender of Final Fantasy XIII that I've started to carry around a business card. Granted, I don't think the game is great. It's definitely flawed. But there are many criticisms of FF13 that I don't think stick. My main apologism points include, it's okay for a game to be really, really linear. That's point A. Point two, allocating player control over a squad of fighters instead of controlling each character individually was a good design decision. Point Delta, some of the characters are pretty cool. And point four, the music is pretty great. Yeah, I agree with the first two. Actually, I think that the linearity is not that huge of a problem, and the squad kind of stuff is, you know, a good decision. Ben, what does Tanner say?
Tanner says Silent Hill 4 is criminally underrated, even by the quote-unquote true Silent Hill fans. I've never understood the hate. For clarification, true is being used to describe the core games, not elitist fans.
I like Silent Hill 4 a lot.
It's good.
I really do. It's so weird. And, like, you know, I like stuff that is off-puttingly weird, like that, in, you know, just intentionally doesn't want you to like it. The fact that it is like, you know, like one half of it's the game and then the other half of it's the game again, but it's an escort mission. Mm-hmm. It's such a departure. I can see where people would say, like, oh, this one of these things is not like the other, but, like, if there's still enough to recommend it.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the hate comes from, is that it's a different kind of format as the previous three games.
Yeah. Also, it's not as dark and it's not as, like, scary and gory. Like, there's no real nightmare misty world kind of split. Like, everything is kind of the nightmare world, but the stuff it does with the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Jala, what's Connor say?
Connor says Silent Hill 4 initially irked me for never actually going to Silent Hill, but how goddamn scary, atmospheric, original, and compelling it was won me over. I didn't realize the gaming community thought so ill about it.
Yeah, it's 4 is where people tend to say the series done fall off. Yeah. You know, like through like 3, like there was never really a Team Silent, like outside of the people who made Silent Hill 1. You know, a couple of them were around for Silent Hill 2, and then 3 was, you know, it had a lot of like the main kind of creative directors behind it. But I think that a lot of people are kind of yearning for days that were not really there.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's just me. And why don't we go for the Silent Hill hat trick? Ben, what does Amanda say? or no, Dennis, what does Amanda say?
Amanda says, I'm definitely an apologist for Silent Hill Shattered Memories. The game is not perfect, but I remember playing through it with friends in college one afternoon and how fun and scary it was, though not on the level of Amnesia or other such games.
Have any of you played that game? Shattered Memories?
Oh, Shattered Memories, no. Is that, I think you might have, someone lent me that game on Xbox One right before Money Smith's, our apartment got broken into.
Yeah. No, I lent you Silent Hill Homecoming, actually, and that was on Xbox 360, and I still need to like get another copy of that game. Not that I'm angry.
Yeah.
Ben, Shattered Memories was Wii only. I've played it twice, right?
Yeah, but... yeah. You played it through. It was also on PSP and PS2, but it was kind of a diminished version. Yeah, I don't think that there are many people who actually take a shit on Shattered Memories. Actually, I need to go back and take a look at like Metacritic.
I think that's because no one played it.
so it's our little secret. But yeah, again, it kind of falls into that same complaint. It's not like the others, so therefore, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's the most hardcore fans who are going to rip it to shreds. Gary writes in saying Deus Ex 2 is not nearly as bad as people make it out to be. It has its problems, almost all of which are resultant of the console port. But if you look around those problems, there are plenty of bright spots. The entire Cairo chapter, the sentient entertainment hologram who turns out to be a spy, the weapon upgrades are all pretty neat. It's also in canon, but they'll never do a sequel because of how poorly it performed. Instead, we're stuck in this golden limbo between Deus Ex 1 and Deus Ex 2. It's a fun place to be, but I want to see what happens to humanity. I never played Deus Ex 2.
Sounds like you should.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I don't know if I'm going to play it unless we do it for Watch Out for Fireballs. And even then, it's I understand. Like, it's kind of a bitch to run. I don't know.
Why so?
Oh, just like modern systems. I haven't tried running it, so I could just be talking out of my ass. In fact, people are probably like screaming at their at their iPods. Let's see, Ben, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. I know a lot of people who thought it was a cash grab for Game Boy Advances and link cables, but I thought the world enticing and the structure unique. It was one of the first games I played where I started to understand the power of indirect storytelling.
That's intriguing.
Yeah.
I never played it, but then again, I never owned a GameCube. I think the only game like that I played was like Legend of Zelda: Link's Four Swords Adventures or whatever.
GameCube or Game Boy Advance?
It was kind of a precursor to the Wii U. It was a GameCube game, and you could play it with up to four people, but you had to use a special cable that connected from your Game Boy Advance to your GameCube to use your Game Boy Advance as a controller. So you could have like a back and forth between what was on the big screen and what was on the screen in your hands. Yeah, it was a nightmare, and it definitely did read as a little bit of a cash grab. But like indirect storytelling, like that's not something Final Fantasy does very much. So now I'm curious. Kilo, if you can go into a little bit more detail about that, I would really appreciate it. Jala, what does David say?
David says Alpha Protocol, but that's been talked to death on Duckfeed, so I'll say Nier. It's a game with a great, albeit slightly loopy, story and amazing music that's held back by repetitive combat and unfortunately hollow magic system. Lots of spells, but few are useful. Still an amazing game that's worth a play.
Yeah. I played a little bit of it, but I didn't keep going. You know, because life.
Because you switched to The Witcher 3?
No, because I switched to August being a crazy fucking month for everything.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil says, they're not really well received in the West, but I'm a big fan of the Romance of the Three Kingdoms strategy games. I like the time period, and a lot of its ideas were used in other grand strategy games. I'd wish they'd start bringing them over again.
They stopped in like the PS2 era, right?
I'm not familiar with these.
It's funny because I think it's a little bit like Crusader Kings, actually. Like when he's talking about grand strategy games, I think that might be what he's referring to. But like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, it's just these very technical, like large scale nation building and army management strategy games that are based in China, like medieval China. Around the time where they had like the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom and the Eastern Kingdom, like all of those. Sure. And like that is the basis for like a bunch of literature and a bunch of, you know, just like history that I'm like super fascinated by, but have never found an inroad to.
Yep. Yeah.
Let's see. Franz says, it's been a while since I played the Alpha Protocol card, so here goes. Alpha Protocol, a great spy RPG with a story that really adapts to your playstyle and decisions. A lot of people seem to hate it because the shooter parts are a bit clunky, and of course you play a dialogue-driven mystery thriller for the shock for the shooting bits. He says sarcastically, I didn't really intone that correctly, but continuing, but I really can't understand why that is such a deal breaker, but maybe it's just me. I'm also the only one who loves the hacking minigame. That hacking minigame, geez. Ben, can you offer a defense for the hacking minigame?
So I'm trying to think. There were three different minigames. There was the hacking one was the one where they have different letters and you're trying to find the constant word, right? And yes. It shuffles it around.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it. I'm fine with it.
My eyes don't work that way.
And they also had
the two different lock picking games, right? They had, or they had the computer game where you had to pick the circuits, and then you had the lock pick game where you had to like gently press the trigger.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It was just like you had to find the right pressure to hold it at. I didn't mind the circuit one because my eyes work like that, but just the constantly shifting letters, it really it felt like I was looking for a redhead in the Matrix.
Sure.
Don't those stand out?
Maybe. and it's like I was looking for a bad analogy in a podcast.
It's like I was looking for sunglasses in the Matrix.
Yeah. Oh no. The best camouflage of all.
Mm-hmm. Camouflage for your eyes.
Oh man. Let's see here. Jala. Or no, this is going to be Ben. I've got the order all messed up. So Ben, what does Roop say?
Roop says, Assassin's Creed Unity. The gameplay itself was shitty and good opener.
Strong start. Yeah.
And crashes happened all the time, but even better. But all the codex texts and all the other extra texts gave much information about Abstergo and other test subjects. It also seems that I'm the only one who's interested about Desmond and all the other things in the modern days and outside of the Animus. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, outside of the Matrix, all that stuff. It's cool. It just, that series kind of hit way too much of the same note.
Yeah, which is it's interesting. I'll be curious to see if they can ever shake that. Like, regardless of how much they actually do improve or change or innovate, the series has kind of been hit with that moniker for people who got burnt out on it and mm-hmm. saw it as samey. And honestly, I couldn't answer the question of what would get you to come back and try an Assassin's Creed game.
I'm going to say that if you put out a game every year, it's going to be pretty similar to the one that came out a year before.
Yeah.
Just make us miss it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Really hard to get. Leave something to the imagination.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we're about a decade into this series. We're 2 years away from it being 10 years. I'm kind of wondering when there's going to be like a reboot or a back to basics kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and God, if they could do the first one again, but actually have a game instead of just interesting mechanics, it's worth the reboot.
They just need to pair up with the Hitman studio and be like, here, you take all the assassin missions. We'll do everything else in the environment and the history.
Yeah. Create like the traveling Woolbury of games. Yeah. Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says, along with Gary and Cole, I'm constantly defending Dark Souls 2 and its value to the series, but lest we speak of that game too much here, I'll say that I thoroughly enjoyed Metal Gear Solid 4. From what I remember, it was critically praised for the most part, but all of my friends at the time said it was boring and stupid. So I borrowed it from a friend and embarked on my very first Metal Gear experience, and I loved every minute of it. I realized, whoa, without having played any of the other entries in the series, that this was to be the climactic chapter in a long-spanning saga, so the abundant cutscenes felt necessary and the story was compelling enough to bring me through, even though I had no idea who anybody was. Pro tip! Don't set out to finish the game at midnight on a Tuesday night before work. That last 2 hour cutscene was brutal.
Oh my God.
I remember having to pause it, go to class, and then come back and finish it. Yeah.
Wow. The
final cutscene of your game is a movie. It is the length of a movie. You got problems, or your Metal Gear.
Yeah. If I ever end up doing that streaming series of Metal Gear, like, I can't wait to get to 4 because it's the entry in the series I've played the least, aside from Peace Walker, which I haven't really delved into too much, aside from being able to figure out that like, oh, I like this game, but yeah, like, I rented a PS3 to play Metal Gear Solid 4.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I want to see the end of this, or what I feel like is the end of it, you know? And yeah, like, I think I beat it over the course of like 3 days.
That's incredible.
I have not played it yet. I've played the other Metal Gears before it, and I also played Ground Zeroes, which I'll talk about in my grind, but yeah. I have not played 4 because I only just recently got a PS3. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have it now. It's sitting there, but other things have distracted me from playing it yet, yeah. But I will get to it, and then I will get to 5 when that's out.
It's one of those things, right? Because I don't think that its reputation is ill-deserved. And for as much as I kind of enjoy its excesses, or at least my memory of its excesses, like, a game gets a bad rap from people saying, no, stay away from that. Like, if I can't honestly recommend a game, it's hard for me to say, like, that its reputation is ill-deserved, because there are lots of other people who are kind of, like, less equivocative about telling people to stay away from something that is potentially mediocre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Let's see, Dennis, what does Josh say? Or sorry, no, what does Ollie say? There we go.
Yeah, Ollie says, one game kept coming back to my mind, a game few people played and was panned by a lot of critics as a style over substance and too different to really enjoy, and that the game was a mismatch of unsuited themes. I talk, of course, of the criminally underrated 13, not to be confused with Final Fantasy 13.
Mm.
This little masterpiece was made by the lovely people at Ubisoft Paris before microtransactions and on-disc DLC made them seem evil, and was a magnificent blend of FPS and stealth action. To cap it all off, it featured the most alluring cel-shaded graphics. They really did look like the comic the game was based on. Due to the mediocre reviews, the game did not sell well, and a planned sequel was shelved. It's a shame to say... excuse me. It's a shame, as to this day, it's still one of my favorite games, and something I heartily recommend to everyone. As an extra bonus, the game Black by Criterion Games also received poor enough reviews, but is right up there with Call of Duty 4 in my eyes of in terms of modern FPS games. Wow, I really sound like an FPS guy when I'm anything but. I remember paying a lot of attention to Black and then being scared off of it by reviews. But it looked like a game that would be really cool.
Black is really fun. I remember liking it a lot. Like, it feels a lot like Fear to me.
It's high praise.
Insofar as, like, what they were able to do visually made the gunfights feel really good. I'm not sure if they actually were any good, but it was an experience.
Yeah. That kind of makes me want to go back and try it.
Yeah.
Any game that you can shoot down a building in the first mission is usually pretty good.
I did not know that was possible.
That's awesome. Stock
keeps on rising in my book.
But I don't think you can play it. Like, I think you have to have you have to get an original copy of it because of backward compatibility stuff.
Was it on PS2?
Yeah, it was on PS2, Xbox. 13 was one of those. It was like an Xbox launch title, or like Xbox and GameCube, and that was one of the first games that I can remember that really did cel shading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I believe, didn't David Duchovny do a voice in it as well?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
That might be true.
I could believe it at the very least. No, you might be thinking of David Duchovny voiced the gray alien in like Area 51 Black Site, something like that. It was something really on the nose. Let's see. Josh writes in saying, "Hyde lied for the NES, much hated. But what other game taught so many children the value of making wise purchasing decisions?" I don't think you're making a good case, Josh. And let's see here, Ben, let's round everything out with Chris
says, Amnesia, a machine for pigs. I'm not sure how it was reviewed critically, but it seems very mixed by people. I personally still love the experience. I'm perfectly okay with an Amnesia light every now and then, with its absence of the dwindling inventory and horror sanity meter. The story is kind of a mess, but I dug the journey. I really enjoyed the Chinese room, talking a step away from emotional walking sim to hiding in the shadows sim. And I thought the entire opening up to and including the church was amazing. I really love the setting, and I would love for the Chinese room to do another horror adventure game in the future.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing after Rapture, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sure they're already thinking about the next thing, but I would like to think that they can kind of take a second and enjoy the moderate success that they're having.
Yeah. So yeah, let's go through ours real quick. Jolly, I want to hear which maligned game you really like.
Well, I had to think about it, and then it was really apparent to me, all in one very simple swoop, Resident Evil 6. Duh. Like, duh. Because and it's not that, like, okay, overall, people who play that game generally enjoy it on some level. They just don't like it as a Resident Evil game. But I don't mind the fact that it's in the series and that it changes up. Like, it continues along that, let's make it an action game with monster things. Like, I don't care. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that being a thing. And I kind of wish that they would just kind of branch off and do two different lines of Resi Evil. You know, like, have the action-y type stuff and keep going with the story that they're going in 6, and like have zombies on the moon or whatever other insanity they would have to do next to like top what they did in 6. And then like, you know, the stuff they're actually doing, which is trying to go back to the original horror elements and things. So, but I enjoyed it. It's fun. Yeah. I don't care that it's ridiculous. It's Resident Evil. Like, what about it?
Would you have enjoyed it as much if you could not play it co-op?
Not nearly as much. The main thing that I like about it is playing through a co-op. So, you know, without that co-op element, I'm not nearly as interested in the game. It's still fun, but it wouldn't be as fun if you weren't able to watch some of this crazy action movie stuff happening with somebody else on the line with you going, oh my God, I guess couch co-op, if you will, like somebody just sitting next to you. And even if it's single player, just witnessing it while you're doing it and laughing with you, that would be okay too. But, you know, generally speaking, when I'm playing on my PC, I'm playing in a room alone with people on the internet. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
So.
That's a pretty good one. Dennis, how about you?
I get to talk about Metrico again.
that's the post image for this one too.
This is my own personal dead horse that I will just keep on beating. That game is amazing, and I was so infuriated that no one could see past it doesn't control like a standard platformer.
Mm-hmm.
Like the entirety of that game was, and I could see how people read it as gimmicky, you know, playing with all the different inputs that you could have on the Vita. But the fact that it tied it together under a theme and just a really strong idea and thesis that the entire game supported so well. Like, it was just such a cohesive unit that it's just baffling to me that people would play something like that and then go, oh, I don't like the controls. Like, there's so much more to it than that. And anyone who's gotten it free through PlayStation Plus and hasn't had a chance, especially because I know there are some of you listening who have Vitas now who didn't before, go play in Metrico. It is phenomenal and honestly just one of my favorite gaming experiences, period. Much, you know, set aside anything about an underrated game.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
All right, so I got two, but also I looked up Voices of 13. So not only is Dave Duchovny in it, but Adam West does a voice in it as well.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
All right, so the two games that I got, an old one is The World Is Not Enough, the James Bond game. I don't know if it was critically panned or not, but it had a solid multiplayer to it, but I don't remember many people playing it because it kind of came out towards the end of the N64 life cycle. But, yeah, that was a fun game. And then the other one that I have is Alpha Protocol, of course. So somebody needed to mention it. But I feel like the only reason that game got panned is because people were expecting it to be a first-person shooter when really it's a choose-your-own-adventure spy game. So, yeah.
Yep. I mean, I cannot sing the praises of Alpha Protocol enough. And that's one of those games that I don't think their archives go back that far. But like, I was very much in the wrong about my first impression on it. Like, I brush it off for all the reasons that people brush it off.
That and Dark Souls, funny enough.
That one is still available. That episode is still out there. So yeah.
That's fun. Dramatic irony. Yeah. Never going to play this game again.
Silent Hill 4 would have honestly been my answer. I like just that game is one of the games in the series I just like constantly think about going back to because it is so weird and I don't know, like just like thematically resonant for me. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to instead say Kingsfield: The Ancient City.
Aha.
Yeah. So this is you know, From Software before they, you know, hit Demon Souls and Dark Souls and, you know, just like Kingsfield was their medieval action role playing series before that. We covered it on Bonfireside Chat. And I never would have played this if it weren't for the show. And it's a little bit of an oddball from the series. But, you know, like it's from that weird period of early PS2 games where people were just kind of like, meh. Like I'm looking at Metacritic right now and it's got like a 60 or something, which is, you know, not that great, you know, in general. But man, is it just so atmospheric and just haunting and good. And I realize that last one's just a little bit generic to say it's good. But I think that is a game whose stock just kind of rises because it's, you know, it doesn't have the kind of weird low res, weird warping 3D problems that like the PS1 games had. So like it actually puts together a really cohesive world. The soundtrack is phenomenal. And like, I feel like if once you get over kind of the floatiness of the controls and the fact that if you don't set the options just right, you're going to get motion sick. it's just like it plays a little bit like a first person precursor to Dark Souls, and that is remarkable.
So do you think you were able to enjoy it in part because of Dark Souls? Like, yes. Do you think, okay, yeah, that kind of paved the way for you to be able to pick up what they were laying down in the previous games?
Yeah, and you know, just like I've spilled enough voice ink about this, but you know, the there are a couple of things that, you know, that are in this vein that I've been able to go back to with a new appreciation. And I'm not going to say something as broad as like, oh, Dark Souls taught me patience, but Dark Souls taught me to have patience in looking for certain kinds of things in games that are like Dark Souls.
Yeah. Also, because we've had so many callbacks to previously talked about games in this multiplayer, I'm going to recommend Voice Inc. as a potential title.
That's pretty good. I'm going to write it down.
Voice Inc.
So thank you everybody for writing in. This is a great question. Thank you, Graham, for recommending this. There are plenty of ways to recommend questions, but there's kind of one main way that we have to, you know, have you answer them. And that is through, you know, the Facebook group that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And thank you, Dennis, for putting that up.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yep, those go out on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, since you've been away for a little bit, why don't you get us started?
I'm full of things. Okay, so. Okay,
cool. Like blood and stuff?
You're wax.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I am full of bread, because one of the first things that I played is I Am Bread. So I must first say that it is extremely difficult to be bread. I think people underestimate the difficulty. It's a game that is made by the people who made Surgeon Simulator, at least according to a slacker. I do not remember which. I am sorry. Somebody said it was made by the people who made Surgeon Simulator, which makes sense because it's very difficult to do. It is physics-based. Your goal in life is to be the perfect toast. Perfectly 100% toasted, not over or underdone on either side. And if you get ants or other types of food on you or something like that, you have an edibility meter that goes down. Like if you drop on the floor, it goes down really fast.
After 5 you know, seconds, of course.
Yeah. And so like, yeah, you literally have a few seconds before it'll start going down all the way. Anyway, you can basically stick to anything, and kind of like when you play Mount Your Friends, you have a button assigned to each corner and you can also adhere to stuff and stick to it and like flop your way up, you know, the side of a countertop or something if you want. It took me a long time to learn the controls because it always takes me a long time to learn controls. But then I finally got, I started the first level in the kitchen. I got to the toaster. I was on top of the toaster and I couldn't get into the slot. And then when I was trying to like throw myself into the toaster, I overshot and fell into the kitty litter and died. So I tried a new tactic, and this time I went on the skateboard over to the oven and I got on a burner, and then I flipped myself over and I became toast on the stove.
So you're improvising.
Yes, I was improvising. There are many ways to become toast, Cole. Do not be so square.
So how do you know that you've won? Like, what is? Do you just get, like,
you get 100% toasted. You get 100% toasted on either side and remain edible.
Ah, I see.
And that's how you win the level, and then it, like, moves on to the next level. I have not progressed.
Oh, it's multiple levels. Okay.
It's levels, and apparently there's some incorporation now with Team Fortress 2.
Because of the sandwich thing?
Yeah. So yeah, that's the thing. I have not gotten further than the first level because it took me a long time to be a piece of bread and to become a piece of toast. And yes, you know that question that we asked a while ago at my urging about eating food? This game made me want to go make toast, and I did. So that's a thing that happened in life. So that was my first game. Any questions?
How's the soundtrack?
I don't remember it, if there was much of a soundtrack. So I know. Oh no, there is a soundtrack. I know there's music in it, but I don't think it's, like, you know, super riveting or anything.
Mm. I heard that if you get to the credits, there's an awesome single by the Yeastie Boys.
I heard the quality wasn't good, that it was kind of grainy.
we're gluttons for punishment.
Okay.
Continue, Jala.
I'm just gonna move on now. Okay,
I'm
so the
pretend
next
that
thing
didn't happen.
You can turn off Murphy's Law and the options.
turn on what? I'm sorry.
So you can turn off Murphy's Law and the options.
What?
That states if you drop a piece of toast, it will always land butter side down.
Oh, okay, yeah. I am familiar with a similar but more broad definition of Murphy's Law.
Yeah, I think I'm almost certain that's where Murphy's Law originated.
I thought it was like in the military.
Maybe?
Yeah, it was like if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. Had to do with like engineering planes and stuff like that.
I mean, the way I learned about Murphy's Law was very toast-centric, so.
Okay.
Facts I didn't know about Dennis. Okay, yeah. So... moving on, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes. I spent 3 hours in this game, although if I'd actually stuck to the mission, it would have just taken an hour. The thing about me in any kind of game like this particularly, I've discovered that I have a 75% chance of actually, like, sneaking in any given, let's call it like a D&D round, if you will. Mm-hmm. The other 25% involves any kind of AWOL activity, like, you know, I'm going to follow behind the guards and see how long I can do it before they notice me, or I'm going to go up to that thing over there and I'm going to crawl on this thing. Can I get in there, that place, and whatever, or just randomly attacking people. Like I do this kind of thing all the time. So like I just make my own fun whenever I get into a game like this. And so I might sneak, but a 1 in 4 chance of doing something random is a pretty high chance given the fact that we're talking like a round, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why it takes me so long. So I was playing it straight for a while, and I was behaving, and I got to the first guy that you needed to get to go rescue, and then I hopped into the chopper because I thought that if there was a chopper, yeah, I was supposed to be in it.
Nope.
And, and that ended the mission in failure. So
you left pause. Then,
and so after, yeah, and so I thought they were going to, like, drop me off closer to where I was supposed to be going. No, I was not supposed to be on the chopper. So
nope.
Whatever. I mean, like, the icon was, like, flashing at the chopper, like, that's where mm-hmm. I need to be. So anyway, after that, after I played it straight and that was my reward for doing that, I decided that I was going to hop into the giant tank, and I popped in unseen and nobody thought it was weird. And then I just started shooting fools, and then I ended up triggering. I found out that they have, like, infinite reinforcements, apparently. and so, you know, I was blasting anti-aircraft guns, a bunch of dudes. I went on a killing spree, and then I ran from everybody, and then I got out of bounds, and then I gamed over because I was out of bounds. No fair. So anyway.
How dare you not just animate everything for an entire world?
Well, I'm all about my, like, let me go do things. And so anyway, I was having fun doing all of this kind of mayhem. And I did eventually finish it, yes. Like, I did calm down after my tank bit and actually finish the game. But One comment, and I'm just going to say it is not a spoiler, because if you don't know that things blow up in a Metal Gear game, yeah. I can't help you. But that bomb, though, what the fuck? Like, if you played it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't know if they earned that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that was the second thing I played, and since Cole's already talked about it, I don't think there's anything else to say about that.
I have a question about it.
Okay.
Is it worth buying and playing now, or is it better just to wait a week and play the actual game?
Hell no. It's fun to play.
Yeah, it's going to come. I believe it comes with Phantom Pain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, never mind. Inconsequential. Mm-hmm. Play it anyway. It's fun.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, I'll send you my physical copy, because I got it free on PS Plus, but I have a disc of it.
Neener, neener, neener. Anyway, okay, so the last thing I played is Dark Souls.
You're kidding me.
Nobody's played Dark Souls. Dark Souls. Here's what happened. I was trying to figure out what game I wanted to play next, and I was debating if I wanted to go and play Last of Us because Allison was so kind as to send it to me, or if I wanted to play Metal Gear Solid 4, or if I wanted to play Spec Ops The Line because of Cole, and then I was like, you know, I'm just going to go in a totally random direction as I do, and so I'm going to play Dark Souls. So, ta-da.
Yep. Choose the sixth way.
that's what I do. So, first comment: firebombs are a girl's best friend,
except when they're being used on you.
Yeah, well, at least the way that I've been playing. Because, let me first say that I tend to play mages or spell sword bard type people, light or medium armor, quick moving, you know, projectiles and stuff. That's usually what I play, and if you give me the option, if it's a viable option, I will play a ranged character, and if I can't play like a sorcerer, I will opt for a ranger, or if I can't do that, I'll do a thief. Like, I don't do tanks very often. So when I was trying to do this, both you, Cole, and Gary said, hey, you should do a pyromancer then, and I rolled a pyromancer, but listener Tanner had also suggested a sorcerer. So I rolled both of them. I played a little bit with each of them. I only just got to like Firelink and then was like, you know, I actually really like the specificity of the sorcerer's spells. So I'm just going to roll with that one. It was only later on that I actually wandered down below Firelink and found the dude that sells the spells. And if I knew that was there, I probably would have rolled with the pyromancer instead.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that was there, so I just, you know, picked the one that seemed to have the stuff that I wanted. So, whatever. So, I've played this kind of like a cross between how I play Skyrim and Guild Wars 2. And what I mean by that is, in Guild Wars 2, I was an elementalist with a lot of movement assisting spells and dodge rolled, and I flitted all over the place. In that game, I don't have much in the way of a close range attack at all, so I'm constantly playing keep away by virtue of the game mechanics for that class. In Skyrim, though, I had a light sword and would aggro with spells and archery and then finish guys off with my sword if they live long enough to get close. So in Dark Souls, I tend to play keep away as much as possible and try to gauge enemy power by how much damage my ranged attacks do. And if they don't do much, I mark that enemy as somebody that I need to like stay the hell away from for a while and plot out where I and how I can kill it before it reaches me. I've had a lot of fun just like finding the Black Knights and other very strong things, coming up against them, and then just like finding a place they can't get to.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of fun doing that, because that actually is a lot of fun for me to have to run away from them knowing that they could kill me in like two hits and like being like, ha ha, I got you, sucker.
And your instinct is right, because so much of that game, especially early on, is managing the space that you're fighting people in and like learning your weapon and just kind of like figuring out how to do as much damage to them without taking damage yourself. That sounds super basic and banal as I say it, and so I'm going to back away from it very quickly, but like your instinct is right.
Well, it's kind of like I've started listening to Bonfireside Chat finally because I was keeping myself on blackout from the game because I knew eventually I'd be playing it. So I've been listening to the episodes after I finished that area just to see what I've missed or whatever. And it's funny because, like, between that and then in talking to you too, Cole, like, you guys are like, sorcery is the easy button, but I kind of always tend to play a sniper or a mage or whatever mm-hmm. and de-emphasize melee if range is actually viable. So, like, for me, I don't understand why, for example, okay, you guys had problems with the prowling demon, you know, that guy? I fought that guy, and what happened for me? Okay, first time I rolled down that stairway, he ganked me like, psh, lightning, I died, and I laughed my ass off. Then the second time, after I went down there, I, like, ran behind stuff, shot him with magic, ran up to him, hit him a few times, and then ran past him to the doorway and then sniped his ass from a place he couldn't get me because I was like, nope, fuck you, you're dead. So I'm like, that just makes sense. Like, I play this as if I were in this situation. I wouldn't want to be next to that thing. I wouldn't want to be. Yeah. No, I'd be like in the doorway, like, you can't get me from over here, sucker. You're dead now. So that's how I play. And so, yeah. Like, you guys also had mentioned when you got to the Undead Parish, you know, oh, this part's so hard. But, like, when I got to the church area, I shot all the individual guys one by one, drawing them out at, you know, aggroing one by one with, you know, archery, and then just, you know, took them each out individually. Mm-hmm. I also did the same thing for the Black Knight, but I didn't walk in through the front door because there's a shiny and there's a lot of knights and stuff in there. It's obviously a bad idea to do that. So I went around the side, killed all the little weaklings on the side, and then walked in through the side door, noticed the channeler trying to, you know, gank me from up high. Then I hid behind a pillar, shot his ass, killed him, then went up mm-hmm. there and found all the guys that apparently get, you know, buffed if you go up there right away and try to, you know, melee him. I'm like, I didn't have any problems with that area because I'm playing, you know, very cautiously, you know, yeah. walking around the side like, oh, hell no, I'm playing this like it's a D&D game. I'm not going to go in the front door. Are you kidding
yeah. me? Yeah. And so when we say that range stuff, especially spells, are easy mode specifically because of that. Mm-hmm. there are going to be times where that strategy is going to fail you.
Oh, like, I know.
They're setting you up for that. And when, like, you know, and so when people who are familiar with the game encourage you for that, it's almost like telling you to eat your vegetables a little bit, because learning to roll or learning to dodge or learning to kind of like get up, you know, get up in the fray is only going to benefit you later.
Oh, I know. I spent a lot of time in the Undead Burg just over and over and over again, going through and fighting all the enemies melee style, just mm-hmm. so that I could get used to each of them. And every single time I encounter a new enemy, don't get me wrong, yes, mm-hmm. I do snipe them from afar, but I also take time to generally, you know, go up to them and fight them one-on-one once I know where there's a bonfire, so I can figure out melee-wise how I can deal with them and whatever. So at this point, I'm actually at the like where I stopped off is I walk through the white light, which is never a good idea to go into a white light in this game. And then I walked in there, I got attacked by dogs, and then the copper demon smushed me and I died. And I'm like, oh, well, I see a stairway back there. I know where I'm going to be going when I fight this guy. I'm guessing he can either hit me or go up there, jump up there, something like that, one or the other. So I'm going to have to run around this very small little space with that after I take out the dogs, because those guys have to go. So that's where I'm at right now. And I know that is precisely the thing you're talking about, where it's like, nope, you can't, you know, range them. And mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, well, I've been using my scimitar and shield, and I've been using like a light dex weapon, but yeah. I've still been running around with that. So, you know, like I have enough familiarity with that to be able to still use it. So,
yeah, copper is a wall.
Well, I'm sure by the time this comes out, I will have, you know, plugged away at him until he died from it, but I'm not worried about it. I have ideas for what I'm going to do with him. So
Dark Souls is built around demolishing just that kind of attitude. I'm excited for you. I know that you have like a big affinity for kind of puzzling things out and trying kind of oddball strategies, and this is very much a game that accommodates and rewards that.
Well, I just found a merchant that has stuff that like buffs your weapon with enchantments. So I'm pretty sure there's a weakness in there that I just have to find out which one it is. It's only a matter of time. I'm not worried about it. it's kind of like, you know, Cole said with patience, you know, like you just have to keep picking at it until you figure out the thing. So
find the thing, MacGuffin, or whatever you want to call it.
Yep, just you know, look until you find a crack.
What is the MacGuffin for strategies?
What?
So like, you know, the object that kind of gets you, the you know, physical object there, you know, the objective that you're trying to get next is the MacGuffin. Mm-hmm. So what is it's the next strategy? Would that still be a MacGuffin?
I think so. I think MacGuffin is pretty portable, just like Murphy's Law is.
Aha.
Yeah.
Toast.
Yeah, sometimes the MacGuffin is toast.
Toast the MacGuffin is toast.
Especially if you're at a Denny's.
What?
I don't know.
Yeah, this game is, I'm still early enough in the game that I don't have to feel like, oh, I'm going to die and scream my head off. Like, I haven't even really begun, you know, getting to the really hard stuff. So if I can't get past this guy, there's no hope for the rest of the game. So, you know, I'm like, no.
How many bosses have you fought?
I don't know. However many bosses there are before the Capra.
Yeah, so you
not
probably,
many.
You probably did Taurus, Bell Gargoyles, and then Capra. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just summon Solaire. By the way Solaire pops out is hilarious.
When he does the Praise the Sun?
I just totally am just waiting for him to just start a song and dance. I really am.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff that's going to start making sense to you now. Like, this is a wonderful time. Like, you know, experiencing this game vicariously for the first time, vicariously through somebody. Like, just when, you know, when you're in the Slack and you're saying, oh, I'm playing this, and everybody just starts, like, just, ooh, let their ears perk up. Like, we're all chasing that feeling again.
I remember my first Dark Souls.
And you know how many people in the Slack channel, because I've been posting in the Bonfire Side chat area about this, because I figured everybody would be entertained by my commentary as an ignoramus, you know. And so... the fact that so many people are like, I wish I could go back and experience it for the first time again. It's like, whoa.
Oh, man.
I'm not addicted. I'm not addicted.
keep.
I can stop anytime I want to.
Keep us apprised of your progress.
Yeah, shall do.
Yeah. I have a very small game to talk about. By which I mean a game that you can only play for 5 minutes a day unless you want to pay a lot of money.
What game is that?
So this is a game called Triple Triad. People may recognize this as the card game from Final Fantasy VIII. The amazing card game from Final Fantasy VIII. Yeah. This was released on the Final Fantasy Portal app, which is the just the most goddamn ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Wait, is this 8 or is this 9?
8. 9 had a version of this, but it was not as good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like Tetra something. I forget what it was. But yeah, Triple Triad, like the actual rule set for it is pretty great. It's really simple. You have a hand of five cards. Each of these cards has a character on it, but that's mostly just art to kind of like sit at the center of these four numbers. There's a number for each side of the card, top, bottom, left, and right. Mm-hmm. And you have a grid of it's a 3x3 grid, and the first person plays their card somewhere on that grid, and you have to place your card, and if two adjacent numbers so you place it next to it, and then whichever number is bigger, you actually win that battle, and then you take that card, and whoever has the most cards at the end of this wins. And different cards are balanced, like, ooh, this has a very strong top or a very strong left, or, you know, this one's kind of like a really good corner card. Like, it's a relatively simple game, but there's kind of strategies in how you build your deck, and the numbers are small enough that I can, you know, kind of like understand it. And the mechanics are simple enough that it's not like a Hearthstone where like everything is just flashing lights and numbers and I can't really, you know, make heads or tails of it. And there are special rule sets too, where it's like, if you place your card in between two other cards and the left and right numbers match, between them. Like, oh, you take both of those, and there's ways to like make a bunch of combos out of them. And in Final Fantasy VIII, that worked really great because those cards could be turned into spell casts, which could in turn be equipped to a character to really max out their stats. And that was a way to kind of get around their super kind of like interesting and, you know, I'm going to say great leveling system in that game. Was like the, you know, the card game with its simple base rules and kind of the different ways, you know, the different permutations, you know, throughout it and what it could net you, made it just a wonderful addition to that game. Now on mobile, even removed of those kind of like metagame kind of things where you're using this to improve your chances of succeeding in the main game, like the actual rule set is still fine. Like you're in there, you're making these quick decisions and they're ramping up the number of characters that you're fighting against, or, you know, like the difficulty there. Each character kind of has cards from their own little corner of the series, and it's not just Final Fantasy VIII stuff. So you are actually getting characters and things from throughout the, you know, from throughout the series, which is nice. Like it, you know, makes the collector and me happy, you know, to do this. The problem is, this is kind of my first time really being burned by an energy system.
Uh-oh. What do you mean?
You know, in mobile games where they give you a certain number of plays for free, and then you have to wait a certain amount of time in order to go back into it, in order to play again, unless you want to give them a whole bunch of money or give them, some number of money because you want to play again now, or you want to rush production in Tiny Tower, or you want to rush production in Farmville, any of those kind of things. This is, you know, where a lot of places, a lot of games and developers make a lot of their money in mobile, is by
they prey on impatience.
Yes. And so, you know, I kind of went into this understanding that it was free to play and like maybe it wasn't going to be too bad. Like, whatever, I can just play whatever they give me for free and collect my cards, and that is going to be A-okay and fine. However, a match of Triple Triad lasts 45 seconds to a minute. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you get 5 plays a day plus one extra one. Just for playing every single day. So every, you know, if you log in, you get a bloop, and every half hour, one of those little crystals, one of your energy units recharges, but it won't go above the 5. So when you wake up in the morning, you have those 5 sitting there, and then those are gone unless you come back, you know, 2.5 hours later to play your 5 again and then come back. But the problem is, like, that's not enough. Like, 5 minutes every 2.5 hours? Like, if I want to sit down and play some Triple Triad. So here's the thing. You have those crystals and you have that energy. And if you want to, I was like, okay, well, I'll just give them, I'll pay them $20. If I wanted to pay them $20 to have this system kind of like relaxed, right? Like
to own the game, essentially.
Yes, to own the game, or to make it like, okay, so now you can regenerate 20 crystals at a time. Well, no, a dollar gets you a certain number of gil, but there's a bulk discount as you're doing this, and then that's your gold that you get, and you can't get gold anywhere else. And then you have to take that gold, then you have to use that, and it's not a straight one-to-one comparison. And there's a bulk discount on the crystals as well. So essentially, what they've created is a black box that you put money into, and you have no idea how many extra turns you're going to get out of it, except to see like that at the lowest kind of like the worst economy of scale, you're going to get basically one round per dollar, which means you're paying a dollar for 30 to 45 seconds of play, or 45 seconds to a minute of play, which is unacceptable. Even like the worst round of Pac-Man lasts longer than that. Yeah. And that's just a fucking quarter.
Yeah.
So like, this is just incredibly botched. They have an excellent game, you know, as simple as it is, that like made me feel like I imagine Hearthstone people feel like, in having this, you know, this card-based game with art and music and characters and stuff that you're familiar with, and playing it, and like, this is going to be something I'm going to dip into for a little bit, or I'll be able to pull it out in between calls at work and just kind of like rock this out. But the individual units are too small and they're asking too much to like get around that. So like, instead of doing what they want me to do, which is giving them a couple of bucks, you're not getting anything out of it. And, you know, instead of just going in every 2.5 hours, it's not even worth my time. It's not even worth the time to boot up the fucking terrible Final Fantasy Portal app.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, to go through this and to, you know, to go through the weird little splash page where they're trying to sell you on this or that. Like, I don't need marketing. Like, if I had a little triple triad doodad that I could put on there and like it would just give me a little bloop when it was ready to play, okay, maybe. But if you enable the alerts for that, you know, you're just saying, hey, Square Enix, sell me stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. Like, this is botched, you guys.
And this is like the official licensed one too, so it's not like a knockoff, and you know someone else could do it right. This is canon.
Yes, this is this is canon, and it's all numbers, right? Like if they go in and say like, okay, you know, like maybe we didn't do this right. Here's a fix as they rebalance it. Like that's something they can do, but I can't see anybody doing anything that would get them less money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the money to goodwill kind of equation is so skewed there.
Yeah.
I don't know, like this is, you know, like even with Plants vs. Zombies 2, I was like, ah, it's kind of a bummer, but like this, it's just a way to play the harder version of the game. That's fine. It's a little bit gross that they keep pushing it, but whatever. Like this is the first time I've really been like heartbroken by an energy system in a game and in any kind of like mobile game. And so that's weird in 2015 to say that.
Yeah. I think it sucks if it's anything like the game from Final Fantasy IX, which I had a little bit of experience with. Like, it's heartbreaking because there is so much potential there. And it is such like a perfect fit for mm-hmm. mobile.
Yeah. You drag your little cards around. Like, the interface inside the game is okay. Like, it explains, you know, it explains the different rule sets and it gives you plenty to work with. And the art is super charming too. Like, it's great, but it's terrible. It's great, but it's terrible.
Yeah. It is terrible because it has the potential to be so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if they had a fixed price for this game, like ahead of time and no sort of pay to play, how much would you pay for it?
$15.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hoo-ah, on a mobile device.
No, my equation is kind of skewed. It's just kind of like, I mean,
as long as it's not $20, I'm in. Yeah.
Yeah exactly. So yeah, like so I would pay that. Like, you know, like I understand that Square charges a lot more for their stuff and I expected it to be that way, but like, ah, man, like if you put $15 into this, you could blow through that in a day.
Yeah, which I'm sure there are some people out there who are doing.
And they're whales. It's just so gross.
Yeah.
But that's all I've been playing. Like, Paper Mario and Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin. August is fucking nuts. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
So I've only played one game, but I played a multiplayer game called Towerfall. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast or not.
Briefly.
Okay. So I played it on, I think, PS4, but I assume it's just on any sort of multiplayer console. It's not a terribly complex game.
It was originally an Ouya exclusive, and then it came to PS4, and then it's on Steam, too.
Okay, gotcha. So it's just a pretty simple multiplayer game. When we played, it was a four-player game, so I think it plays up to four players. But it's very akin to the Mario competitive game from way back when, where it's like Mario versus Luigi, and then you run around the map, and then there's turtles that come out to try and kill you. It's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Except you have four players. The map is somewhat dynamic, where things can kind of change to make you either rush to the middle or avoid certain parts of it. You can fire arrows at any given time, as long as you have arrows. You can pick up upgrades to upgrade your arrows, and the goal is to just kill everyone else on the map. And so you can either shoot them with an arrow, or you can jump on top of them Mario style to kill them. And then based on how many kills you get that many points for the round, and then you play to like 10 or 15 points. So it's just a short little party game that's kind of short and sweet, but it ended up being a lot of fun. I don't know how much to say beyond that. I mean, it's kind of similar to what is it? The car soccer game where it's just like short and sweet.
Rocket League.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
but there's not that much depth to it. You know, you don't, you're not playing it for the narrative or any sort of deep philosophical meaning.
So. How does the archery manifest? Because I haven't actually played this.
Frantically.
I mean, like, so are you, is it like a, like an Angry Birds, like drag and release kind of thing where you're sending an arc out or?
So you have an arrow, one button to hold to prime your arrow, and then you use a joystick to pick the direction.
Oh, wow.
So what it ends up being though is somebody's nearby and you just spam the arrow button and really hope that you kill that person. So. Yeah.
Hmm.
But the cool part about it is, so you'll run out of arrows and then you won't be able to use that anymore. And so you have to like run around and find pickups. Like, so anywhere you shoot an arrow, the arrow will still be there. But if somebody picks it up, then they have it then. And one of the cool mechanics too, is the map wraps around like right to left, top to bottom. So if somebody is like above you and is threatening you to jump on top of you, you can try and find a hole in the bottom of the map and then fall through, and then you have the edge on them.
So it just, it changes it. Like it changes what you have to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
It's very, being John Malkovich-esque chase. Like sometimes. Yeah.
And it's like Asteroids. Like it's back to that classic, arcade style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. This is, so you're playing with four people the way it was intended to be played.
Mm-hmm. And they have different characters, like they have like, you know, like different classes of characters, but they apparently make no difference in as far as what their abilities are. So they're pretty much just for show.
Yeah. So, nice. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have anything new per se, but I do have an expansion on several things that I've played recently. So those things specifically are Broforce, which continues to be awesome, Hearthstone, which continues to be an addiction, and then Heroes of the Storm, which I continue to be completely unable to make heads or tails of. So, it's been fun to kind of get a little more exposure to all those things. Broforce, we got a co-op session going, me, Jala, who else was in it? I think Graham was in it. And then Phil Holmes, maybe. Mm-hmm. I feel bad. I can't remember exactly who was in it. But getting the full four player experience was a lot of fun. And I feel like the chaos is starting to settle down a little bit. So when I talked about it last, I complained that there were portions where I just didn't realize I was dead or didn't realize I was still alive because there was so much going on. And I feel like that's being distilled down a little bit for me as I learn how to watch the game I'm playing, if that makes any sense. How to read the screen.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've seen anything as I've gone and unlocked more levels that's like revolutionary to the core concept of what's going on. Like they haven't put any huge tweaks or spins on what you're doing, but they don't really need to because it's what you're doing is a lot of fun. I expect to play that one co-op many, many more times. So, we'll definitely look for other people who have that to play with.
Hmm.
And they sell it in a 4-pack, which I was tempted to get, but if you know 3 people who might be interested in playing, that's a great way to get the game.
I like it when they do that.
How much is it? Did you ask Ben?
Yeah.
I paid, I think, $15 ish for it. I mean, $10 to $15. I don't remember the exact price point.
I think it was 10. Wasn't it? I don't know. Whatever.
Maybe it was 10 with the 4-pack or something like that. Or it could have been 10. Like it was a non-trivial discount with the 4-pack.
Okay.
Hmm.
But in that range, in the it is sub 1 coal.
The coal unit of money. Yeah. Makes me sound so privileged. I feel shitty about that.
Wasn't it Mikhail that played?
Oh yeah, it was. You're right. Yep, that was our group.
Hmm.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
When you mentioned the sunglasses and the Matrix, I just thought of Neo from this game.
This game is subsuming the references that it makes.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Any questions on Broforce? It's a lot of fun. We should play co-op sometime, everyone who is listening.
Yes, everybody needs to play that game with other people. It's a lot of fun.
It's one of those games that, like, I'm checking right now. No, I don't have it. I thought that I did, but
yeah. Well, it's more fun. Like, I ran through Metal Slug and some other ones like that with people recently before Broforce, and really Broforce is a lot more fun for me. So
yeah. But it's in that same vein of like Metal
Slug. Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I don't have any questions about it. I'm happy you're having fun with it.
Yeah. Hearthstone is Hearthstone. They just did their gigantic update. And I have not bought a single new card from the new expansion. Because I am a curmudgeon and I don't like spending real life money on the game. So I will continue just slowly plodding my way through the single player expansions using in-game currency. And I'm having a moderate amount of success, just being my old only gold Dennis self, which is fine. It's a fun little game. And then the MOBA, Heroes of the Storm. I played significantly more, and I learned just how easy it is to lose giant swaths of time in that game. And keep in mind, this is like the fast-paced, short MOBA Lite.
How long is each round?
It's been clocking in for me around 20 minutes.
Okay.
Which, you know, I think the other ones clock in around 40. So yeah,
45 is what I've heard.
Yeah, so less than half of the time. And still, it's just so easy to be like, oh my God, I've been playing for 2 hours. What the hell happened? But it's still, I'm the time is not going to waste, in that I think it's I'm in that most enjoyable phase with these online games where you can feel yourself making tangible progress every time you play it. And so I feel like I'm learning and I'm getting better noticeably every round that I play. And, you know, you always hit that point where you feel like you've kind of plateaued, and so you need to try something drastically different, or just take some space from the game or start investing money. But I, you know, I'm not there yet. So it's still a very rewarding experience to play.
Nice.
The available cast of characters shifted. So there's 5 new heroes to play with, which got me to try something different.
Who's your new go-to?
I can't pronounce the name.
Which game is it? Like, where are they from?
I think it's from Diablo. I'm not sure. Mm. I'm very unfamiliar. As much time as I spend with the Blizzard games, it's the two games that reference every other Blizzard games all the other Blizzard games. So, I know most of the characters in Hearthstone from Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And I know most of the characters in Heroes of the Storm from Heroes of the Storm. But the character is actually at the top of some of the best characters for quick match lists that I've read. Huh. It's like a noob something. It's like a giant spider dude. People are yelling at their various speakers right now. I'll Google it when there's a break, and I'll come back with the name just randomly at some point later on. But it's a very different. So the first character, the Raynor was like a ranged assassin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not getting down into the fray. Or if you are, you're doing something horribly wrong. Whereas this new one that I was playing is very much a be in the middle of the fray character. So a tank. So that was a very different style. But all the things that I'd learned about kind of positioning and deciding when to engage and making sure you're with a teammate, those things transferred between the characters really well. Hmm. So yeah, still having fun with it. I don't know, even at just 20 minutes around, I don't know how sustainable it is for me to invest time in this, but yeah. I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
So here's a question that I have. You're playing with randos, right? Like you're jumping into public matches.
Correct.
Okay. How's the community in this? Like, is chat enabled by default? Are people patient with you as you kind of get your legs under you, especially as you're kind of changing from one character to another? Like, basically, how toxic is the environment?
Yeah, I am. So the environment is primarily silent. The chat is not used a lot, and I will try to, like, if I'm making a decision, like, hey, I'm going to be in the bottom lane, or, wait until I respond, I'm almost back, or something like that. I'll type it in. And people actually respond to those just through their actions, not through actual typing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll be like, I need help in the bottom lane. And suddenly two teammates will appear to help me out. So people are responsive. But I really can't remember someone typing like I've been doing into the chat outside of just good game at the end, which is really weird. It's not hostile at all. It's not, you know, I've never had anyone question what I was doing or call me out. But at the same time, it's just this weird silence going on for such a team-focused game. I have not unlocked Team League yet, so, you know, I have not gotten access to the more organized levels of the game. I imagine there might be more of that there, but for the time being, it's just kind of a obedient but silent counterpart to playing. get GG at the end, and that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, it's not bad. Therefore, it is good.
Yeah, you know, silence is
comparatively
golden.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, and especially like I said, and that's. I would understand if it was a completely toxic, hostile environment. I would also understand if just it was this nothingness where no one responded to anything and I might as well be shouting into the void. Mm-hmm. But it's this weird, like, hybrid where people actually do, like, read it and respond to it. Just everyone else has found a better way to communicate than me, apparently. So I'm sure I'll discover, like, after you know, getting responses to this episode, that there is a voice chat that I can enable or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, for now I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm curious. So you've not been able to jump in with anybody from the network, like anybody who listens?
No, everyone is talking about Hearthstone nonstop.
Yeah, I was going to say the co-op channel is pretty much like the Hearthstone channel. At least that's how the Slackers are liking to call it. It sometimes gets hard to actually talk about co-op stuff because they're talking about Hearthstone stuff there. That gets lost in there sometimes.
All right, game day decision. Should I just create a Hearthstone channel?
At this point, you might.
I think you would make a lot of people very happy.
Okay, yeah.
Cool. Then I will do that.
Ah, Anub Arak is.
Yeah, that sounds like a Diablo ass name.
It does, doesn't it?
Hmm.
It looks like a Diablo ass character too.
Hmm. Cool. Well, that is that's great. I'm happy you're having a good time with it. I don't know that I have any questions about it other than the community stuff. I don't know. Like, I can't envision a world where I actually like dip into it, but your recommendation on it, or at least your positive experience, makes me feel like I'll be able to get over. I would be able to get over a hump with that I wasn't able to get over with like League of Legends.
Yeah. It's now not a question of it being like possible for you to do it. Now it's a question of you having, you know, it being high enough in the priority list to do it.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Do you all want to button it up?
Do sure. It.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level number 118. The numbers, they are just flying by. And also, Jala, thank you for filling in and for coming in and hosting in David's stead.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure.
I am trying to think of what we can do when this episode comes out. This is the day of the first public Duckfeed Live event.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So cool. If you're listening to this in the afternoon when this is likely to go out, I recommend going and checking out the Facebook groups or on, you know, the old websites and things, or the Patreon as well, in order to see that. Gary and I are going to be on there answering your questions. Backers get priority, and also the Slack channel, which we talk about a lot. That's kind of the live chat for this. So come hang out. It's 9 o'clock on Friday. If you missed that, which is likely, I'm sorry to hear that, but there's a bunch of stuff happening with the Patreon that is pretty cool. So go and give that a look if you haven't yet. That is patreon.com/duckfeedtv. I'm trying to think if there's any other like admin stuff. It's been a while since we've got a review. I know I say that every time, but I'm going to make an earnest plea to anybody who has not you know what I mean, Vern? anybody who has not given us a review, I know that going into iTunes sucks and it gets more inscrutable and baffling every single day. But it does help us out. Like every time we get a review, we show up in a chart for like a little bit. And if we keep getting reviews, more people can find out about us. So even if you just click a star rating, that goes, you know, it helps not just our egos, but it helps more people find the show. Yeah. What else am I missing?
Do that thing or otherwise I'll cry. You don't want to make me cry, do you?
Emotional appeal.
Yeah, we're holding tears hostage.
4 out of 5 doctors would give us a review.
Oh. So back Gary's Kickstarter, that's duckfeed.tv/soulsofdarkness. And yeah, I want to go to sleep, so I'm going to around the bend. Yep.
that's a title.
but yeah, this is I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Always Jellachon, that is all.
Sometimes Merkelizer at Twitter.
Yeah, occasionally Merkelizer.
Only sometimes. Every once in a while, like every few months, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And until next time, put the cap on the pen, you dummy. The voice ink is going to dry up.
Yes.
I only had 2 other titles in the hopper. Looking for Sunglasses was the other one, and then Around the Bend. So, did anybody else have one?
In at the Bell.
I know, right?
Yeah.
you got mine as soon as I heard it.
Yeah.